And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
And we're rolling.
And it was a purple colour and I had to see the... Anyway, yes. Here we are.
Did he have to lance it in the end, Nick?
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good grief. Here we are, episode number 48.
48.
Of social media white noise. Coming to you from Alfredo on Church Street in Brighton.
25 Church Street, to be precise.
25 Church Street, Brighton. I am Nick Butler, a.k.a. the Loudmouth Man.
I am Andy White, aka Doctor, spelled out fully, Pod. Doctor
so
Pod.
We have less than 1 month to show number 50, and there are less than 3 months till Christmas.
Yes.
I don't know which makes me happier.
Neither.
Either.
Neither.
So let's cool the whole thing off.
Let's cool. How does the song go? I won't try and sing.
So we have a coffee served. I'm assuming this is Lavazza coffee.
Danger. Sexual coffee innuendo is coming up. This is explicit.
It is. I tell you what. For a Monday morning, there's a sharpness in Lavazza coffee that you always get. That I think is underplayed in the afternoons, but it's coffee that you probably benefit from having some milk in.
Yeah, I've got milk in mine.
You have milk in yours. I'm always drinking my coffee black.
Yeah, interesting shaped cup, Nick.
And well, you know me, I prefer a mug. I'm a man who likes a mug.
Yeah,
these are mug cups. I like something where I can fit my fingers through the hole. No, we'll stop right there. Anyway. Fantastic
what
stuff.
Are we covering today, Nick, in today's
really
social
kind,
media
very
white
kind
noise?
Of allowing us to sit here and record social media white noise, where we're going to talk about being jailed for not recovering your password.
Man jailed over computer password refusal.
Where we're going to talk about the fact that high-definition copy protection is no more.
HDCP cracked.
New Twitter. You have it, you don't have it, you love it, you hate it. Backups and Windows Phone 7 launch.
Backups will be really interesting, Carbonite versus
possibly
Kryptonite.
Possibly Google Apps for your domain.
Yeah, we must talk about it. We must get Stoney on. My friend Stoney.
We should.
When are we going to get Stoney on? Shall I give him a call?
You know what? I think the fun thing is a lot of people say to me, they talk about social media white noise as if I'm somehow anything more than the talking head on it. Like I have any control over its production, its creation, its content. Because it's all Andy. I'm just the loudmouth who's invited on to have opinions. Andy mostly turns up in
Nick,
order to provide me the punchlines.
We wouldn't have this show without you.
Well, you'd have social media white.
We wouldn't have the noise.
Exactly.
It would be very boring. I wouldn't be able to get what it is with you.
Will Harris.
TM.
There we go. I must ask Leo and Robbie Llewellyn if we can get Will Harris on. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I see that there is a news story, which we have linked up on the site.
We have. I'm going there right now.
Of a teenager who's been jailed for 16 weeks for refusing to provide a password to some encrypted files on his hard disk.
Oliver
now,
Drage.
It's okay, it's worth pointing out, because a lot of people go to this first of all, he's being prosecuted for sexual indecency and it's alleged sexual indecency charges, etc., which are on the BBC News website. Obviously these are very serious issues.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that the police feel that they should have more powers to encourage you to prosecute and criminalise yourself is the Think of the Children defence. In this case, they've got a series of files on his hard disk. They want to have access to them. And because of a law that was passed by the Labour government quite a few years back, the police have the right to expect you to provide passwords to give them access to any encrypted files or mm-hmm. password-protected content that they discover in the course of an investigation.
Because, of course, we do realise from a technical standpoint that it would take the police approximately 11 billion years to crack this password.
well, you know, the next story is certainly about password cracking and hacking and cryptography, but there are a number of laws that were passed in the UK that created this sort of almost sort of general belief that the police were the third military power, the fourth military power, that somehow or other the police were responsible for state security in a way that they're actually not. And giving them the powers to do things like stop photographers and accuse photographers of being terrorists, which is why we see that photographers are saying, you know, I'm not a terrorist. Equally, expecting people to provide passwords to secure or confidential information as part of a procedure, but they don't have to have evidence. They don't have to have anything more than suspicion. And the suspicion here is, we don't know what's in here, so we're suspicious. And as a result, the if you are detained by the police and they have your laptop and they want to inspect your laptop and it's password protected, if you don't provide them the password, then they can put you in prison for that reason alone. On that basis, they can put you in jail because you're causing a problem for the police. You're creating an issue for them. Now, let's put aside the fact this is a teenager. And the issues of the sexual allegations that there are. Let's actually look at the issue of having laws passed that assume that the police will always be accurate in their investigations and will assume that any information discovered as part of this procedure will, of course, just be, you know, ignored. There won't be a copy of it. It won't be utilised in any other way. That you won't end up incriminating yourself on another issue. The tough part here is obviously a lot of times when we get into surfing in legal issues, people confuse American law with British law, mm-hmm. which is a classic routine, and they are totally different. But I have to say, I would really object to the concept that you can be forced to give up password protected or encrypted information, let alone that there isn't any, without any real evidence. If they have a clear chain of evidence that says, we know this, we know this, we know this, and therefore we know that in this directory there's something that we need to look at, I have no problem with that. But simply having police say, because we're suspicious, we want to look, and you have to let us look.
Do they have to specify what the password is for?
Yes. Yeah, they have to be okay. Clear. They have to have a clear chain of evidence.
So if they spot on your disk a large area of what appears to be white noise,
here's the thing.
Can they say that is genuinely white noise? Can they say, give us a password
to
that?
Point. How do you know? What happens if you give them the password and the password doesn't work?
Or you've generally forgotten it.
You're under duress and you can't remember the password. Mm. I mean, let's face it. There are times we've gone up to the cash machines. And we've suddenly forgotten our pins.
Which is a four-digit number.
And of course, saying you've forgotten something won't be a defence. Ignorance isn't a defence in criminal law. Mm. As a result, you can say, I genuinely don't know this, and they can go, you're obstructing us. We have now more reason to detain you. And that's scary. Again, it's scary because what we have is politicians will pass laws. Mm. Politicians will get involved in debating laws without fully understanding technical issues. Without appreciating the unforeseen consequences of approving a particular policy. And it will then go through. I mean, they had no way of knowing that policemen would use counter-terrorism laws to deter photographers on the basis that they could do that. And let alone the fact that a lot of people who are stopping and deterring people in the streets for taking photographs are not even policemen.
They're security guards,
they're renter cops, they're not actually policemen. And there isn't actually a crime being committed, but there's all sorts of things that are then generated. So it's a worrying story. It's an example where enough people will look at the story and go, well, issues over child abuse, therefore we think it's okay to abuse a political system or a legal system. But that is a very very much well past the thin end of the wedge, and we're well into the areas of like, well, at that point surely we have to say that nobody can have privacy on their computers, and they'll have to register their keys with an agency so that if at any time the government needs to access your machine, because all of this works well on the assumption that you continue to live in democracy, But the moment that you stop living in democracy, the moment that your whole society goes just a little off edge and goes off at the deep end and suddenly decides groups of people aren't to be trusted and therefore they need to be monitored, all of these things that have been put in place will be utilised against them very quickly.
Which brings on another very interesting question. When does a democracy stop being a democracy?
I think that's a scope, definitely not for this show. But since we're talking about cracking passwords.
Oh yes, this hardware.
The HDCP, high definition copy protection, or...
I'm not clear when this was cracked. Was it recent, Nick?
This was a couple of months ago.
So well, it's not recent then.
And the technology that's used to protect Blu-ray discs, in terms of encrypting the content on a Blu-ray disc to stop it being copied off the disc and copied into other content, we've already got signal. We've already got cables now, which are part of your television setup. HDMI. HDMI is there so that you can't sort of put a bit in the middle to record content.
Okay.
Because of course, when we had VHS players, people were basically, you know, hooking up VHS players in serial, playing the video cassette, having a copy of the video cassette, and playing on the TV and keeping a copy for themselves.
Yeah.
Well, things like HDMI take away that control because HDMI has a bunch of encryption inside it that stops you being able to
do
that.
So it's digital all the way to the screen, is that the idea?
Digital all the way to the screen.
Digital encrypted all the way to the screen.
It gets encrypted. So if you have the technology to suddenly go to any Blu-ray player or any Blu-ray disc and have a master key that unlocks the content of that disc in such a way that you can take a copy of the image information and the file information that makes up the video, that's a huge sort of bonus to you in terms of, well, now you've suddenly got a way to crack the content. We're back to the same old scenario of people are not appreciating that ownership and property ownership, as far as media goes, is rapidly deteriorating in terms of our opportunities to own stuff, and it's heading much more into the control of the media get to say who gets to own what and for how long. It's not only just that you no longer own an album or you own a CD or a track, but you only own it for the lifetime of that media on that device with that user account. If you have an Apple iTunes account and you suddenly haven't got access to your Apple iTunes account or your Apple Music account.
Yeah. This reminds me also, there's a faint link here to this idea of digital assets versus physical assets.
And that in the
digital world.
Yeah,
with the digital world, there is no tangible evidence of your ownership. And this kind of reflects that.
This is where I constantly write letters and make phone calls, etc., and make a nuisance of myself to the local MP, pointing out the Digital Economy Bill's problems. Constantly sends me back a fixed form letter saying the creative industry has made thousands and thousands and thousands of losses, which doesn't make any sense at all, because those losses aren't real. You can't say how many. You just genuinely can't say how many sales you didn't make.
Are those losses based on the assuming that every illegal download would have been a genuine sale, had they not been pirates, which is about as stupid as saying something else that I can't think of at the moment.
There is a very good cartoon that says, if you get content and you pirate it, you can then use that content however you wish. Right? At which point, you're a pirate, you've done something legal. Now, let's say you've bought that content, so you've paid for it, you've then gone through a copyright, decryption process to get the content into your own format. At that point, it's completely illegal. However, if you stay within the realms of what is legal, you buy the content, you use the content, that particular media player disappears. Let's say Apple iTunes just folds overnight.
Yeah.
There are no authentication servers to authenticate against. Well, now you have a large collection of content that you legally owned, you legally paid for, but you don't actually have any rights to, because the bit that said it was legal has disappeared.
Yeah.
So the only thing you then left with is, well, I go ahead and buy it all again, or I pirate it, in which case when I pirate it, I do something illegal. And the MPs don't have the clear answer for that.
Interesting thing about this story.
What they're missing is that if you took the position of saying, you know what, it's not the government's position to protect these businesses from failing to adapt to a new market, and in fact encouraging, if a business is making a huge loss, it immediately adapts its market to stop making that loss, right? What businesses are trying to do here is say, we're making a terrible loss, let's legislate to protect that market.
Yeah.
It still won't help, because what people will do is they'll just ignore what the legislation is and move on to another product anyway.
Mm.
They will still make the huge loss.
Mm.
But now they've also legislated, so they've incurred more costs. The net result is they'll continue to lose. And the arguments will always be, oh, but we need to protect these industries because there are all these jobs that are inside it. But if we're going to believe in a free market that can create these jobs, we have to believe in a free market that can also lose these jobs.
Do you know what, Nick?
But we're back on politics.
There
Welcome
are
to the Politics Social Media White Noise Show.
A lot of very large dinosaurian industries out there.
Dinosaurs
with
in a
very
suit.
Small brains. And guess what? There's a huge meteorite coming.
Well, that's presumably if you're going to go with meteorites ended the dinosaurs' reign. But speaking of ending the dinosaurs'
reign...
That's
in our other podcast, Social Brontosaurus White Noise.
What's that? I'm not even going to... Speaking of dinosaurs...
Yeah.
Are you old Twitter or new Twitter? Are you retro?
I've gone to the new. I've gone to the light.
You're on the new Twitter. Or
I
as,
am.
I like to call it, the one more click.
Okay, I'm going to have a look at it now.
If you're in the UK now, by now you may have the blue banner up that says, that nags you into...
Welcome to new Twitter. Read up on what's new.
You can have the new Twitter experience.
I am on the new Twitter.
I am glad that it hasn't completely subsumed my wallpaper.
So, it's still around the edges.
I can still see around the edges.
Yes.
I'm, on the whole, less impressed with it.
Why don't you like it, Nick?
It takes one more click to do everything.
Does it?
It used to be that to click on a list, I would just go over and click on a list. Now
yeah.
I have to click on lists, then click on lists.
It's because they've become tabs, haven't they?
Now that I want to click on a message to reply to somebody, I have to click on messages, click on the person, click over on the message thing. It seems to be there's just one more click to everything. Everything is just one more click away. And it's actually less convenient. Whilst it's nice to be able to see a bit of a conversation thread that goes on, it's slightly slower. It's slightly more cumbersome. It's just slightly more.
Mm.
And I actually reached the point this weekend where I thought, well, maybe this is when I pack it in with Twitter.
You're kidding me.
I am.
You're kidding me.
I just don't think this
but
is
But Nick
how
will miss your coffee innuendos on Saturday
my
mornings.
My coffee innuendos, my sign-ons,
and your
sign-ons, my sign-offs.
And your sign-offs. You can't leave Twitter.
Somebody's actually bookmarking those and collecting them.
I'm going to form a Facebook group. Do not let Nick Butler leave Twitter.
Challenge you. I challenge you to get even 500 people to give a damn about that particular group.
I think it's great. 600 different accounts.
And then I will invite you to my Facebook group. If you think forming a Facebook group makes any difference in the world whatsoever, you are an idiot.
Group.
And that is my Facebook group that I set up for that purpose. Whenever anybody invites me to the change, it's like, and we're back to politics again, changing your avatar just to support some political issue, you're not actually doing anything.
Are you inferring that changing your avatar is a proxy for action?
You're worse than those people who keep your poppy from last year. That's what you are. You're that type of person.
Nick, you surely cannot be leaving Twitter just because the interface has changed.
I hate it.
Now,
I
come
loathe
on.
It. I despise it.
Can you go
it.
Back to the old one?
I actually switched back to the old one and use the old one quite a lot. And it's like...
But you normally go to the website, do you?
And then
do you
I
not
use
normally
remove
use...
it permanently to remove the blue bar. And then I'm working on what Grease Monkey script I can put to remove the bit that takes the banner away. And then it'll just be all traditional... And I'll be happy.
So you're hacking it, are you?
Already. I'm using remove it permanently to remove stuff. I don't need the who do you want to follow. I don't need that. I just... And you can see where they put advertising space in. You can see where the adverts are going to come. Hey, speaking of adverts...
Yes.
Let's thank our sponsors.
Sponsor time.
The ever-generous eBuyer of eBuyer.com.
Yep. We salute you.
Again, we raise a cup of coffee to you and say
I'm
thank you.
I'm raising my empty cup.
Thank you for
pretending
your coffees
to drink from it.
And thank you, eBuyer, for sponsoring the show. And again, I actually heard this last week, somebody found that our subliminal messages about eBuyer and eBuyer.com led them to go off and shop at eBuyer.
So we've got at least one client.
One extra client.
Excellent.
I had to use them this week.
Yeah.
In fact, I used them from week to week. I have to say that the experience online of shopping at eBuyer.com is one of the most pleasurable. I had a client sit there and say, I want to spend 500 quid on a laptop, Nick. What do I buy?
Right.
In fact, I recorded a video and I put a screencast up for it as well as to why I enjoy shopping with
eBuyer. It's cool doing that, isn't it?
And I was in the office with them and I just went, here's eBuyer.com. Right, let's select laptop. Let's select your budget. Now let's select how much memory you want, what disk size you want, and it narrows down the choices.
Yeah.
And simply put, that little filter that they do on their eBuyer page has to be the most elegant way of shopping online. The fact that I can order kit up to 11 a.m. at night, 11 p.m. at night, mm-hmm. even 11 a.m. at night, because I'm up that early.
Yes.
And I know it'll be there next day with me to take out to my clients. I know that they'll track my deliveries and tell me what they can and can't deliver. Gives me faith in using eBuyer.com, and that's why I appreciate the fact that they sponsor this show.
Thank you, eBuyer. We are very, very grateful.
And remember, if you are enjoying the show, I would encourage you to go to our donate page. A little button there at the top right-hand side, go to donate, drop a donation in. All your donations keep continuing to pay, because those two words don't mean the same thing, for our coffee. Send a donation. Average cost of a show for us is £10.
There you go. Oh, look at that. He's giving us free goodies.
And there's been cake arriving as well.
He was saying, cheers, shush. He didn't give us any free goodies. It was an optical illusion.
We are, again,
are doing
absolutely
for time,
indebted to people who donate to us.
Yes.
It's indebted to them. Right. Indebted to them. And the way we pay our debts is we drink the coffee, we eat the cake, and we do these podcasts.
Excellent. Anyone else we need to thank at this point, or should we just move on?
I forgot her surname, which is why I was
Claire.
Claire
Evans.
There we go, thank
time
you.
Time management expert Claire Evans. In fact, I was interviewing her last week for another show.
Yes,
thank you very much, Claire Evans.
Yes, thank you, Claire, for your
author
donation.
Author of Time Management for Dummies.
I know. And you know, I was going to buy that book.
Were you?
Just haven't found the time. Actually, I bought this book on feng shui.
Yeah. Okay.
Didn't know where to put it in the house.
I'm sorry, listeners. I'll try and fire a golf ball into his mouth. Hang on.
Shall I back up a second? Shall I back up?
Go on, then.
Actually, speaking of backups...
Oh, no.
I have some new friends. My wonderful friends over at geekplanetonline.com.
I'm going to eat some of this cake that's I found.
Are now hosting with Amazon Web Services.
Ooh.
And we're hosting with Amazon Web Services. And one of the benefits we get in hosting with Amazon Web Services is full access to the back end of our the hosting environment. So we have started using Jungle Disk servers, Jungle Disk server backup, $5 a month, pretty much unlimited data transfer, 15 cents per gigabyte, the first 10 gig is free, of backup capacity with rack space. And it's fantastic. There's a little application that runs on the server, then there's a management application that you can run on your Mac or your Windows PC that connects through Jungle Disk back to the application on the server and keeps track of all the updates and all the backups that have run. And we're backing up our server every night to Jungle Disk server.
Excellent.
The result of this backup to Jungle Disk server is that we get just over 600 gigs of data is backed up, but it only backs up the differences. So every night it's maybe backing up about 80 or 90 gig in data transfer, and it sends that back up. The cost of running this website for us on Amazon Web Server, the hosting costs alone have not been more than $12 in a week. And yeah, we're looking at £6-7 a week in hosting costs. The data transfer costs have not been greater than $5.
Per month or week?
A week. So when people are looking at this and saying, well, Amazon Web Services, I want to do it, but I think it's going to be really costly, because everybody goes off to the Amazon Web Server hosting calculator, and that always scares you. The reality is, and I'm going to track this back for a lot of people, but the reality of a site like Geek Planet Online, who is providing MP3s, podcasts, and a community, well over 1,000 hits every month of inquiries for the podcasts, and it's not going to cost us more than $60 to $70 a month to run.
Okay, let me get this right. Are you using Amazon S3 via Jungle Disk for both the backup and the hosting of the media files?
No, with Jungle Disk, because it's now hosted with Rackspace, we're actually using Rackspace's hosting instead of S3. Mm-hmm. So it's slightly cheaper, since we won't be paying for the data transfer rates. Hosting with S3, we pay for data transfer rates.
Do our US listeners have this option?
If you've signed up to Jungle Disc, this is an option in the Jungle Disc server. What I'm very impressed with, though, is that the medium instance from Amazon is a 2 gigahertz server with 1 gigabyte of memory and over 160 gigabyte of disk space.
Mm-hmm.
Which is incredible. It's huge. It's amazing. It's a big truck suddenly pulling up and distracting me. A big, scary truck with, it's obviously a unit of some sort, on the road.se. Fair enough.
Oh, wow. It's a bizarre looking thing.
But back up to something that I cannot continue to stress how important they are. Somebody had their external hard drive die on them, so we were able to recover the data from their external hard drive. But it did leave us with the feeling that maybe they should also have had something like carbonite.
I was going to ask you, what's your experience with carbonite?
Because carbonite, for $46 a year, gives you unlimited storage space for your backups.
Right.
It's desktop environment rather than a server environment.
Yep.
They'll give you a 15-day free trial.
Mm-hmm.
Try Carbonite at carbonite.com. I've put the link on the website.
Yep.
And this will back up your PC, back up your laptop.
It works on Mac as well, doesn't it?
It works on the Mac, on Windows.
Because I tried it on my Mac, it didn't work.
Okay, that surprised me.
Unless it was just a bad install, but it wouldn't see some of my local files, which put me off it. But don't take what my experience necessarily is a put off, because the moon might have just been in the wrong phase when I installed it or something. It couldn't see some of my local folders.
Okay. Well, we would have to go back and have a look at that.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone else has that problem, let us know.
I don't know anybody's had a problem with
apart from that,
it
sounds really good.
My view is, if you're just a laptop user, go ahead and get yourself Carbonite.
Yeah.
If you're running a business and you've got a server and you've got a few PCs, go and play with Jungle Disk. Because you can get a workgroup edition of Jungle Disk that'll give you shared storage space online, so you can have a shared network drive on the internet that works just like a drop disk environment, so it caches local copies of data.
Brilliant, okay.
But it also then synchronizes it online, but keeps the locking mechanism so that more of you can work on the same files over the internet.
Sorry, is this Jungle Disk?
That's Jungle Disk.
Okay, right, so it's a little bit like Dropbox.
Two different people to go and look at.
Yeah.
And Dropbox, which is another product again. I actually have a write-up that I've been working on that is breaking down all of these different areas and where they will fit for you.
It's interesting, because you then strayed onto the area of collaboration, which is very separate from backup.
Yes.
So backup is very straightforward. It's just like copying a file from here and having a copy over there, maybe a third one somewhere else.
Right, a backup is not having a copy.
Right.
That's a copy.
Right.
A backup is when you have a copy of your copy.
Yeah, or at least in two separate places apart from the original.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it.
You've got to have your laptop with your hard drive, and that's your time machine, or it's your external backup, or it's your Acronis True Image.
Yeah.
But when you're running Carbonite, or when you're running Dropbox, or when you're running Jungle Disk, that's when it takes that copy and puts it out onto the internet. One's the original, two is the copy, three is the backup.
Right.
One, two, three. And that's what you need to look at.
Okay, interesting.
And that's something every now and then I go back over and explain to people, you don't have a backup, you have a copy. There's a difference. One of the great things with Jungle Disk is it actually lets you keep them almost indefinitely, so you can have different archive levels. So you can go backwards and forwards in time as well.
Now, is that a new thing? Because I'm sure they didn't have that at the beginning.
No, it's always been there in Jungle Disk. It's been there.
Like versioning. How many versions back do you go?
Yeah, I mean, I set mine to go back 30 days.
Okay.
On backups. And then...
You mentioned this thing about incremental. So, for example, if you have a one gigabyte PST file...
If you have a one gigabyte file, but it's only 20 meg that's changed, it's only sending 20 megs of changes.
Okay, so each version is about 20
meg. That's called bit differential copying, and that's what it's doing. rsync does that for you natively.
Yeah. Okay, interesting stuff. Better move on, Nick, because time is against us. Windows 7 launches,
and
phone
7. And since we're on time, it's launching today, and I, unfortunately, cannot be there, but Windows Phone 7, I had a chance to go and play with this phone. Microsoft invited me up to a little sort of bloggers, go and have a little wee play with this, and Obed Ran, who's their sort of community manager and technology sort of evangelist for Windows Phone 7. Let me say this. It might be all hat and no cattle, but don't underestimate the fact that this is a phone that's going to change up how people are working with mobile devices.
Okay, let me... So, sorry. So
it's
this is Windows.
This is a phone that
operating system for phone.
It's not the Windows operating system for phone. This is a specification for hardware.
Yeah.
With an operating system called Windows Phone, Windows Phone 7. The Windows Phone 7 operating system, much like Apple's iOS operating system, is designed to work within specific hardware.
So this is Microsoft spec, is it? So
this is a Microsoft spec for Microsoft phones.
Yeah.
They're releasing it on all the carriers.
Yeah.
They have a few handset manufacturers are responsible for the phones. Let's just go over some of the basics of why I think this phone is going to change
up
how people use it.
Go ahead.
The first thing is, they've taken the idea of an address book and thrown it right out the window.
Yeah.
Because an address book on your phone or an address book on your SIM card... it's always an address book on your phone, an address book on your SIM card. There's always duplicates.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pain. Duplicates are a pain. Mm-hmm. What this thing does, it says, hey, I tell you what, why don't we link to Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and your Facebook friends can update their mobile contact details.
Yeah, yeah, makes
and
sense.
And if your phone book, if their phone book's available to you, then you'll have their phone details. But not only that, you'll have all their contact details.
So each of your contacts maintains themselves.
And that's kind of...
Where have you seen this before?
You know, this is an amazingly smart way to handle an address book.
Doesn't names do this?
This is, well, to a certain extent, you're already doing this within Facebook. And, I've sort of come back onto this before, that smart use of social media and social networks would reduce spamming. Mm-hmm. Would reduce. Because you don't want to have contacts, you know, you have levels of trust that are actually defined by your own address book. So they have a traditional part of their address book, etc. They have wireless syncing. You don't have to plug this thing into a cable to sync it up with your home computer.
Yeah.
It will not be a big jump to imagine that they're going to offer you an online service to do this for. They don't have that yet. That's not in place. But if I only have to have a PC that's going to back up all the data from my phone to there, they have synchronization with the internet on the phone. So the phone is constantly in continuous contact with the internet. Mm. It's making use of the internet as its sort of cloud-based environment to send and receive data. It links into the sort of Xbox Live and the Microsoft Live environment.
Okay.
Now, this is where I see it. Because they're going to make building apps for it easier, they're removing the need for you to think about apps. So instead of you thinking, I've got to go into the camera, I've got to go into the gallery, I've got to go into this, I've got to go into that, they are thinking, they're putting everything contextualized within the actions you can do it. If you're looking at a photo, you probably want to do this with a photo. If you're looking at an address book, you probably want to do this with the address book. So they're removing the need to think about things in terms of apps. And they're thinking about the phone as a live operating system. So not only does it have a live front end that continually updates with information that changes from your contacts point of view and from website point of view, but also removing the sort of concept that the phone is in itself a silo for data and moving it much more to the phone gathering in information all the time.
A bit like Flavors Me.
A bit like Flavors Me. It aggregates all that content together. That's a very good example. And What I really liked about this phone, where I see this phone changing a lot of interactivities at the moment, I have an iPhone, but it's still a discrete device. And it doesn't really react with my laptop, with my Xbox, with my online life. I can legitimately see, because they're going to have an app store and they're going to control the app store, but once they've got an app store and we're connecting apps to things like Xbox Live, where I have another collection of my social network contacts, and we're going out to game developers, and gaming and casual gaming is being built in, and we're already seeing things like Fable will allow you to interact with an application on your phone that interacts with your eventual game character when you're playing online.
Okay.
So those two things come together. I
another
can see
example
it.
Of forking the internet.
Well, Sky produced an application on your iPhone that lets you control your Sky player.
Sky
Plus Anytime now lets you go onto line to choose what products you want to have on your Anytime control and then download them to your Skybox. So the new updates on Sky HD Plus include a network connection that connects your Skybox to the internet directly, removing the need to send things over the air. So you have this phone that could very well become your remote control to the devices in your house for entertainment. So it's the remote control to music, it's the remote control to your Xbox, it's the remote control that talks wirelessly to your PC or to your media center player.
Is there a built-in phone as well, Nick?
And apparently you can make phone calls.
Excellent.
Which is a great thing.
Excellent.
And if you want to make phone calls and therefore leave a comment or have an opinion on this show, come to socialmediawhitenoise.com and leave a comment at the end of this podcast.
Please
in
do.
The commenty type section, and then go up and click on the donate button. I'm making hand gestures, I know, you can't see them, but click on that donate button and send us some pennies.
I will photograph Nick in doing his hand gestures.
Doing my hand gestures.
So I've been Andy White, Dr. Port.
And I've still been Nick Butler, aka the Loudmouth Man at loudmouthman.com.
And thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod, and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, Social Media and Technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.